2 years is a long time to be focused on something. I have trouble with 30-minute blocks sometimes. Over the Christmas holidays, right after Christmas, Gina and I traveled a little bit together. It was a lovely experience. And early on in the trip, Gina developed symptoms of a sinus infection, and it kind of developed into something lovely. And she enjoyed it so much, she decided to share. And so she, you know, sharing is caring, right? And so I had symptoms along with her on the way back home. We had a great time. Don't feel sorry for me. It was fine. But the trip back was hard. So if you've ever flown with a sinus infection, you know a certain form of torture. The CIA has been trying to figure out how to mimic this particular form for a very long time. Because what happens is, you know, there's this like cocktail of condensed soup and Elmer's glue that gets stuck up inside of your head. And, you know, it's unpleasant to begin with. And, you know, starting a flight is not fun. But when they start to make the descent into the, you know, into your airport, your location where you're going, it's at that point that you start feeling things that you wish you had never felt before. And so I was kind of in that process of, right, and by the way, they do that about halfway through the flight, right? And they start calibrating the pressure inside the cabin and the like. So it just kind of pressure builds and it's really unpleasant. And so I got, we made it closer to the airport, and the only thing I could focus on, and I tried everything to distract myself, but the only thing I could focus on was how bad I hurt, right? You should feel sorry for me at this point, right? Yeah, thank you very much. But I was focused on that, and that was my, you know, like, I cannot shake this. And I knew that I would be getting off the plane in a little while, but I just was just like focus, until, and we landed on New Year's Day. And I don't know if you remember New Year's Day here, it was really windy. And at Dulles, it was really windy, so there's all these crosswinds going on. That's an extra special kind of feeling too, right? So you could feel it in your body where the pilot is just kind of navigating through those crosswinds. And suddenly, my head didn't hurt quite as much as it did before, right? My focus shifted, right? Because I was afraid of dying. Actually, I was afraid of my head exploding first. But then I didn't want to have, a tragic plane accident is nothing to joke about. But my focus shift, if you get what I mean, and you know, I didn't feel bad. Even deplaning, which when I've done in similar situations, is like, oh, poor me. But even deplaning, after I had survived that, and you know, at one point when we touched down, one wing was still up. You know. And then you could feel the pilot kind of, all right, I'm just going to set this other one right down. And we had all the wheels in all the right places, and the air brakes were kicking on, and, you know, things were good. Thank God for good pilots. And so the point I'm trying to make with this is that focus is a powerful thing. And we sometimes kind of lose track of the kind of power actually that we possess in our ability to shift and direct our understanding and focus about things. It's a gift, but sometimes we get confused by it or underestimate it or don't use it. Now, we'll be using that tomorrow. Have you heard about the snow?
No.
What might snow? Yeah, no, okay, let me just stop here and say, some people love the snow, and some people do not love the snow, right? So we have a conglomeration. But you have to be careful within the snow, particularly if you are driving, right? Now, I know that some of you are from the north, where, you know, snow is kind of a common thing, and it's no big deal to drive in. You learned how to drive in it and that sort of thing. And then some of us are from the south. Now, I'm from the mountains. I learned how to drive in the snow pretty well. I kind of do that, all right. But there are people that have not driven much in snow or ice, and they believe that all the rules are the same, no matter what, right? Now, and that's not to say that they're bad people, but they're just stupid in the snow. So much so that in 2019, a tweet went out to try to assist people from the South in knowing how to drive within the snow. I thought it was so good. It actually made it onto a TV station in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it says this: if you rarely drive in the snow, here's what you do. Just pretend that you're taking your grandma to church. There's a platter of biscuits and 2 gallons of sweet tea in glass jars in the back seat. Now, to make sure that you are calibrating your focus just right, understand that she's wearing a new dress. And she's holding a crock pot full of gravy. Now, that will calibrate your focus, right? That will regulate how you are working your way down the street. Because if grandma gets that gravy on that new dress, there's going to be decades of trouble for you. The Magi were people who understood very little about what was going on. There was an understanding within the world at the time that when a major event, or particularly a major, an important person came onto the scene, that person would have certain, you know, events that would surround it. It was like, oh, look, there's these things happening. Something important is about to happen. It was a way to tie an authority, a government, to the divine. So there are stories about when some of the Roman emperors were born, stars appeared in the sky, and there was, you know, all these celestial events that kind of pointed to the fact that this guy is important, you better listen to him. Of course, some of those stories might have been true, but a lot of them were political theater. So, of course, as these people, the Magi, we guess that there were three, we don't know exactly, and we don't have names. They didn't wear name tags. It certainly didn't get recorded in the scriptures. But we know of a group of people that were learned enough to look to the sky to recognize there is something weird going on here, and we need to chase this thing down. And they began that process. That process took them from home territories, places where they would have imagined themselves being, you know, comfortable, and into Judea for a very long period of time. I was joking with the kids. Can you imagine how their necks must have felt staring up at the sky and then traveling during the day in that direction? Now, here's a really kind of fascinating point to this, that these are not Christians. You're not really any Christians at that time. And they're not Jewish. Isn't it interesting? God is able to take these things that are part of the natural systems or the, you know, kind of created cultural systems and still speak through them. That God is able to call magi out of the East who are focused. Who are focused but are also willing to kind of like go chasing after something that is not what they expect or they fully understand. Would God do that to you? Call to you through the natural or cultural systems that are surrounding us all the time and say, come on, I have more. I have something for you. Follow me. Even in your imperfection. Even in your not fully understanding. Would God kind of invite us to something that seemed crooked at the time, but then is actually the path we need to go, that actually holds at the end of that path that we might have been ashamed of or struggled with, find a way for us to be and to be with God? It's a long life. We have to make sense of so much. And yet still the story comes to us again and again about people setting a focus on something and following it through. A number of years ago, I was really privileged to be invited to be part of a group that learned how to do planning for organizations and families, businesses. But it was rooted in a planning system that was developed for people with disabilities. It's called MAP and PATH, MAP and PATH discernment training. And so one of the things that you do as part of this work is you get a long sheet of butcher paper. Remember those days when we put butcher paper up on the wall? It was before there was PowerPoint, you know. And we would take this long sheet of butcher paper and put it up onto the wall. And then in this corner, there would be, kind of a graphic representation of the person, oftentimes. A person with a disability, a person with a question or a problem, a person with a goal, right? And then the other thing that we would do is in the other side of that long piece of butcher paper, up in the corner here, we would take and draw the best star that we could, right? And then we would begin a conversation about what is it that you want? What is it that you are in need of? What would be the ultimate goal here in life? And we would begin during that course, and there were systems to kind of work through and strategic questions that were part of it, but we would write down in that corner what the ultimate final goal was. And for whatever else that was in the middle, that, once we had locked it down, did not change. And when I did that, when I learned about it and then did it with people, I found that having that North Star, right? You know what the North Star is, right? If you know where the North Star is, if you can identify that, you can orient yourself wherever you need to be. Not easy. But if you have that North Star, you have a way. Having that North Star for so many made all the difference. Sometimes we lose our North Star, or we forget our North Star, or sometimes we're not exactly sure, or we haven't kind of done the work. Sometimes the Lord will say, here is your North Star. And we'll go, what? Where? So I wanted to just come back to you at this very pregnant moment. I don't mean that in a, please forgive me for using that, but you know, we are in the edge of something. We continue to be, just naturally, because we've turned on a calendar, turned over a calendar page, but we are also kind of standing on the edge of the our reality. So as we look into an unclear future, it's always unclear, what is the North Star that is pointing you and guiding you down that crooked road? And if you follow it, you just might run into Jesus. What might the Jesus you run into receive from you as a gift from that crooked road? So the homework for today is to not lose sight, to find that star and follow it well. There's different ways to approach this. Some of you may know exactly what that North Star would be for you and the particularities of it for right now. Or you might not be sure. You might be wondering. There may be something that you're wrestling with, or something that you're trying to discern about, or something that you're afraid of but still holds so much possibility, that kind of pregnancy that is right there, metaphorically, maybe literally. One way that churches sometimes use to provide an opportunity, maybe kind of a prompt for the Spirit to kind of say, hey, how about this, is to use star words, to provide words on this Epiphany Sunday for people to kind of take and consider as what might be their focus, at least for a season on this road. We have such words arranged on our altar rail up here that if you want to, you can take one of these and try to make sense, try to make prayer. There's enough for everyone here, more than we need, actually. And perhaps the Spirit will guide you to the right one for you to pick up. It's nothing magic. This isn't magical. But perhaps an invitation for something. Ever how you are discerning your way through this, I invite you to find your star, to look with your neighbors and your family and the which is important to you, to look for those things and go that way. Go that way. These cards will be here for you when you receive communion today. You certainly have the access of people who love you and me, who loves you too, to talk about these things. So I invite you to take these steps together with us all. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. And don't spill that gravy.